Sean go bhfuil an sa léir seo bishop gééis sé leis sin as James Kyle. What was the name of the place you came from, James?
Drumthin, Cranford.
Cranford?
Yeah.
Would it be far from? It's from Cranford,
It'll be about 3 miles from
3 miles.
Cranford. Yeah.
Farming area, James?
Small farming area. Mountain farming.
Mountainy region, yeah.
Mountainy region.
So you were raising sheep and cattle,
We
or?
it was well, we wouldn't have many cattle, maybe 4 or 5 cows, but we kept a lot of sheep.
Mostly sheep.
Mostly sheep, yes.
Hundreds of them, James, sir.
Usually kept around 200 to 300 breeding ewes.
There's a lot of work, like you.
There were a lot of work, and it was all done by hand in those days.
Yeah.
Clipping was all done by hand and dipping. Now they're mobile dippers and you drive the sheep into them, and it's different, but it was all done by hand in those days.
So what would your duties be? You were traveling all the time, walking the mountains and.
Well, you normally had pretty good dogs, do you know?
Did you rear dogs yourself, like you?
Mostly, but sometimes we'd buy dogs too. They weren't hard to buy in those days. Indeed, you'd get a great dog for £4 or £5.
But you'd have to train them, James.
Well, we would buy maybe a trained dog too, you know.
And did you use the method of whistling and all that?
No, just we used commands.
Yeah.
We used commands.
If the dog was good, it was no problem though, like if he was wise. Like.
Well, the training was a bit of a problem because you would rather buy a trained dog because in the training, the dog did so many wrong things before he did the right thing, and it cost you a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm.
So it was far handier to buy a dog.
See, with raising sheep, James, how many were in your family anyway?
Four, two girls and two boys.
So you were dependent on sheep rearing and sheep.
Oh,
rearing.
That was it. Well, the girls normally went away to work, you know, when they come of age. Myself and my brother stayed at home to work the farm, like, and work the sheep.
So you'd walk to Marts and sell sheep, James?
Walk to Mass every Sunday, yes.
And to Marts as well?
Oh, yes, of course. Well, later on, we had a transport lorry. We would transport our own livestock. And then with that lorry, you worked for other people as well, do you know?
How far would you go to sell them, James?
Our main sailing area was, well, Broca. In the west of the county.
That was a big distance.
Yeah, it was a long way. Well, it'd take you 2 days getting there if you were walking. You walked the day before, half roads. And normally in those days, there were stopping points. There would be a farmhouse that would keep you free and keep your sheep, graze them for the night. That was the old custom in those days.
And did you walk that far?
Oh, we did. Oh, we did indeed, and walked. We even bought sheep in Broca and walked them home.
And you'd break your journey the way you said you'd
start. Break the journey, yes. There were always a few houses that you knew you could stay in, and they would graze your sheep and keep you free charge and put you on the road the next morning.
And would Broca be the biggest, you know?
It was the biggest sheep fair probably in this county.
I'd say so, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Used to be thousands of sheep in it. And it was all horn sheep now, all Scotch bred sheep.
And was that the breed you had, James?
That was the breed we had, yeah.
Yeah.
And they were the best for the mountain, like, you know.
So you had acres of that farm of mountain land, like.
Well, the mountain that. Well, we had two farms, you know. One of them had grazing to one hill, and the other one had grazing to another hill. So we had grazing on two mountains because we're two farms on two different town lands, if you know what I mean.
I do.
Yeah. One of the mountains was 1,000 acres. There were, I think, 14 tenants. But none of those tenants kept any stock on the hill. We were the only ones really kept any stock on it.
So were they farming at all, James?
Ah, they were farming, but most of them was down near Kerrygart, and they had better land, if you know what I mean, and they didn't bother about the mountain much. They cut their turf on it, that was all.
And did you cut turf on
your... Oh, we did, yeah. Oh, we cut turf. We used to even sell turf.
Did you?
Oh, yeah.
So did you own a horse and cart and all that?
We had two, we always kept two horses.
So you deliver loads as far away as...
We used to deliver them as far as Milford, which was 7 miles away. Oh, we did. It was part of your livelihood.
Yeah. And you wouldn't get much for...
In my days you got around about a pound or a cartload.
I suppose it was all right, you know.
Oh, a pound in those days, 50 years ago, 60 years ago. Sure, you would have bought lambs in those years for a pound apiece. Money was scarce and money was valuable.
And how far back did your dad farm that land that you were on, that farm, you know, as generations before him, or did you come from how far?
My father was born and bred near Kerrygart, a place called Glenhaw, and he bought that farm up on the mountain because it was bigger and there was more outlet, but he kept the little farm in Kerrygart, which is still there within the family. And then we bought another, he bought another little farm up there in the hills. So we actually had three little farms. And on each of those farms back before that, there would be a family reared.
So how far back can you go on the Kyles, Seamus? Would they come from?
I'd imagine this parish now, there are a lot of Kyles in it. It's full of Kyles. I would imagine they might have come from Derry. I don't know. Leslie Lucas, the Dower family tree, but he couldn't go back very far. I think he only went back as far as my grandfather, because the records of the Catholic Church was held in Dublin at the time. And where they were held was burned. I think it was held in the Protestant Church in Dublin. And it was burned, and the records was all burned.
So you couldn't trace?
Couldn't trace it very far back.
But in your area, there would have been, at that time when you were growing up, there would have been five households, like your five homes in that townland, or?
Oh, there were five or six homes in that townland, yeah.
Are they all gone now, James?
They're all gone, yeah.
Were the Protestants, some of them, or?
No, there were no, you wouldn't find Protestants up there.
No. And better, but there's plenty of Protestants in Cranford.
Oh, aye, well, that's a good farming area around Cranford. There's good land there. That good limestone land. No, you wouldn't find them up there.
Describe the house, James, you lived in. Was it old, like?
I wouldn't remember it like it was an old thatch house, but my father slated it when he bought it. He rose it a kind of a story and a half. There was an upstairs, a kind of half upstairs in it, you know. And he wrote, it would be like a dormer thing. And he rose it a story and a half and done it up a bit. It wouldn't be much of a house now, but at the time it would be classed a good house.
Oh, it would.
In those days, yes. It's lying dormant now, slits falling up it. So that's it.
And who owns the farm now?
A nephew of mine, my brother's son. He owns it now. See, the old people died in tests, made no wills. So when my mother died, I had to sign the place over to my brother, you know, to give him the right to his farm. Because they didn't believe in the old days of making wools. They thought if they made a wool, they were finished.
Well, that is true. So when did you leave that place finally, James? You went and bought a public?
I 1955. I got married that year, January 56. That's when I left.
And you bought a pub here? I
bought a pub, yeah.
In the village of Glen Village?
Right, yeah. Bought a wee pub there. And did. In those days, pubs weren't great. The wee country pub wouldn't do very much now, you would.
Well, there wasn't a lot of money, and people weren't spending their time in pubs.
Not at all. They had no money to spend in the pub back then, 50-odd years ago.
And why did you go for buying a pub?
Well, you see, I was getting married, and there wasn't a house available anywhere, and it would take too long to build a house. So it was like a house I was looking for, not a pub, really.
So living accommodation and...
Oh, it was a good house, good living accommodation. So that was it.
So describe to me how it was. Did you work in the pub yourself, James?
Oh, I did, yeah. Yeah, kept it for 9 years. But you would barely make a living in it now.
Just a few locals coming in,
A few locals come in at night. It was fairly good in the summertime. You had a lot of turf cutting.
Tourism, yeah.
And the turf cutters, they would nearly all come in because it was the bottom, the pub at the lower end of the town, and there was good parking around it, you know, and any of them that had tractors or cars could get parked, and they always come into it.
Then you worked for a while later, was it earlier or later, in the Russipen Hotel?
After I sold the pub, yes. I worked there for around 14 years. I was the head barman there.
But that was a busy place then?
Oh God, that was a busy hotel, yeah. Very busy. But it only stayed open about six months a year. Closed down the end of October or around about that time. Then it was closed till Easter.
And would it have a golfing course beside it?
Oh, great golf. One of the best golf courses in Ireland, sure. Mm-hmm. A Lynx course, playable the whole year round.
So it certainly attracted a lot of tourism.
Oh, it did, yeah. Oh, there was. It's a famous hotel. Yeah.
But the alcohol wasn't as expensive then, James. Do you remember the price of...
When I went into Glen, a bottle of stout was 8 old pennies. You got 3 bottles for 2 shillings, And then it went up to 10 pence, 10 old pennies, half a crown, and you know they stopped drinking for a while, it got too dear. They stopped coming in. That's the truth now. I sold it for 8 pence for the bottle of stout. I think the bottle of beer was 9 pence. And half a whiskey was about 1 and 6 or something.
And the woodbines as well, you'd be selling them, would you?
I don't know if I ever sold woodbine now, but a packet of cigarettes was only 1 shilling or 2 shillings. Oh, they were very cheap.
And did you have to bottle that beer, James?
No, I never bought that. The bottling days was over when I went into the pub.
They weren't long gone, though.
Not long gone, indeed. No. I think some of them might have been still bottling. But I bought it up a wholesaler, McDade's or a Melton.
And what would the pub and the house would then have cost at the time, James, when you bought it?
Well, I bought the pub house, shade full of turf, all the furniture, and a wireless. There was no television. For £1,800. 1,800.
That was big money, though.
I suppose at the time it was a lot of money.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to get that, put that together.
Well, I had the most of it. I borrowed £500 from the bank, But I had the most of it. Well, I had to have some money left for stock, which indeed it wasn't hard to stock a pub in those days.
No, because They weren't drinking that much?
Well, not even that. You'd be well stocked for £50.
Yeah. You'd
very well stocked.
And then you didn't have the drafts, you know, that you have.
There was no draft.
And Murphy's, I never sold, and all this stuff. You didn't have that.
No, there was no draft. I never sold draft.
Just bottles.
Just bottles.
Guinness and Smithwick's and whatever.
That's right. And there weren't that many beers either. You had just Guinness and Smithwick's.
Yeah, limited like that.
And minerals. And that was about it.
And women,
and whiskey, of course.
Women didn't go into the pub then, James, did they?
They would come into party your house, do you know, maybe the sitting room or. Mm. But they wouldn't go into the bar. But they would come into the sitting room.
Who did you buy the pub off, James, then?
He was a man, the name of Dan Riley. His son was a barber in Letterkenny for years. Harry Riley, yeah. Dan Riley was his name, the man I bought the pub from. And he bought it of a man, the name of Dorian, which was the court, district court clerk. And Dorian man always had a great interest in that pub, even long after he left it. And if you were caught by the guards for late night drinking, you would hardly ever get fined in that particular pub, because he was the district court clerk, and was an old judge called Louis Welsh was a judge, and he was more of a playwriter than a judge. He used to write plays. I was caught a few times, and it would be always dismissed. Any wee excuse.
Because he was serving people late, the
man that owned the pub previously to me, or before, was the district court clerk. He was on the bench, you see.
So he covered you. Yeah.
He covered me. Not that you would do much late night drinking, because
some occasions. Yeah.
Maybe some occasions.
And there wouldn't have been many cars out there, James.
There wouldn't be. 3 or 4 cars in the whole parish. About, I think, 4 cars now was in the whole parish. The gallows of Kerrygart, they were doing a bit of taxi work. And there were an old doctor there, Dr. Kelly, he had a car. Joe McGillharry had a car. That was a post office in the village. And there might have been a car or two in Downing's. 4 or 5 cars now in the whole parish. And of course I had a car.
Did you? You had a car early?
Yeah, I had a brand new Hillman.
Did you?
After
buying the pub? And
I had it before I bought the pub.
All right. Brand new Hillman.
Yeah, well, I bought her brand new.
From?
And the price of her was £420. Brand new, drove her out of Dublin myself. She was a 1954 model. Hillman Minx. And I remember the price well, £420.
So you would have been a cool dude, James, driving around Kerrygart.
I used to, before I left home, I did a bit of Hackney with her, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody wanted to go to Dublin to the airport or something like that, I would drive them. There wouldn't be much of it either, because I hadn't the money to employ motors.
Yeah, did not, no.
No.
And then you had a radio in the pub. I mean, that would have been early enough too, James.
Like, yeah, well,
there would have been a few.
Just shortly after the ESB came in.
Mm.
See, there were old radios before that, were the wet battery and the dry battery. But then the ESB came in 54, I think it was. Yeah, 54. So everybody bought an electric radio. Well, anybody who could afford one got an electric radio.
And what about in your home? Did you have a radio, like, on the farm where you were brought up?
Oh, yeah. Well, as I said, the old wet and dry battery radio. You had to have the wet battery. Was some one of them had to be charged every so often. And the other one, you had to buy it so often. I think it was a dry battery you bought. Wet battery was charged.
How long would that battery last then?
It depends on what you would use. It wouldn't last that bloody long altogether. maybe about a month or so. You see, you always had two. You would have one in with the fella that was charging them always. And then when this one run out that you had at home, all you had to do was go to him and collect the other one. And you were never out of a radio, if you know what
no,
I mean.
No, no. You were saying there yesterday, James, your mother was from Downings, was that true?
Well, no, Gordon of Brad.
All right.
That's just a village or a townland above Kerrygaard.
Kerrygaard. But she was a native Gaelic speaker.
Oh, she was, yeah.
And your father?
Oh, yes, of course.
So you were brought up with Gaelic, James?
Weren't a word of English spoken in the house till I went to school.
Gaelic give you a good?
Gaelic will you give you a good. A chalma, could you smoke them with Gaelic? Har lor sitt gillig bier i skara kommersi.
Kjens kallar du tyvärr i?
Cool. Beside Cranford, it's a wee townland just on the north side of Cranford.
So they weren't teaching in Gaelic, was that?
No. You had a Gaelic book just.
Right.
You had to read a lesson every day out of that book. But everything was taught through the medium of English. Yeah, you see, it was a mixed school.
Protestant and
Catholic. There were near as many Protestants at it as Catholics.
So once you went to school is when you stopped, more or less?
That's when the English started.
Yeah.
You had more or less to learn the English. It was a handicap to you, the Irish, rather than a success.
And would there have been many in your place where you're brought up? Would there have been many native speakers like Gaelic speakers?
There were about four families in that townland, and I would say there weren't a word of English spoken in either of the four houses. That's now there were two Gallagher families beside us, and one of the Gallagher families' mother was from Downings. Come there. And the father had nothing but Irish as well. Another guy in our family had Irish, and they were an O'Donnell family right beside us. They're gone for years out of there. It was all Irish they had too. And they were a Doherty family. Now the father would have plenty, he would have nothing but, well, a lot of Irish anyways, rare for Irish, but the mother would have known. So the family hadn't much Irish, but there were plenty Irish on the father's side. So that was about all the Irish-speaking families was in that townland.
But it just went its way, like, and people emigrated. And
Archer, that's all them families left.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was nothing much for them in them days now, only ago.
Yeah.
There were some very big families. There was one family, there were seven brothers in it, the Doherty family. There were seven in that house, so they all had to go. I suppose some of them joined the army during the war now. A lot of them joined the Free State Army, done their national service for the war. And then they emigrated after they came out of the army.
And what about your own family? Did they leave, James, and emigrate?
No, my sisters did, but myself and my brother stayed at home.
And your sisters went off to Scotland or England?
They went to England.
They stayed there?
Oh, they stayed there, yeah. Married there and stayed there. Aye.
So you met your wife who was teaching here, was that at Jameson?
Sorry?
Teresa, was she teaching here in Kerrygaard?
She was teaching in Cool School. School right. I went to as a child. That's what she taught.
And you met her at dances here? And
met her at dances, yeah.
And see, then when you married, you had a story that, like, at that time, women had to stop working.
Oh, yes, there was a ban on married female teachers.
Yeah, they had to stop.
They had to stop once you got married. But when you were getting married in those days, you had to go to your local parish priest for a line or a license, as they call it. And there was a little Canon McMullen in the parish here. He was from Donegal town. And he was an army chaplain before he was in the First World War. And he was pretty shell-shocked, but a very nice man. So we went to, myself and Teresa went to him one night for this license, and he done the necessary things for us. Then he asked me what my intended wife did, and I said, she teaches. Oh God, he says, I'm looking for a teacher for Glen School. Well, I says, she can't teach for you. What do you mean she can't teach? He said. I says, you know, there's a ban on married teachers when they get married. Well, if she gives in to teach for me, there'll be no ban on her. And then she said she would certainly teach for him. And she was in the school for 2 years, and then the ban came off, and she was there then in the parish till she retired.
Very good.
That's the way.
So she was an exception.
She was an exception
to the rules.
That's right.
James, you went yourself to England for a while, you said.
Yeah, after I sold the pub, I used to go over an odd time to England.
So you sold it after 9 years?
After 9 years, yeah.
And took off for England.
That's right. Well, I had no job here, so I had to do something.
Yeah. So where did you go in England?
I went to London. Yeah.
And just started looking for work?
Well, I knew a fellow that was contracting there. He's a local fellow from Kerrygarty here, John Duffy. They're known as the Duffy and Carr contractors. So he started me right away. So any time I wanted to go over there, I always went to him and I got started with him.
Was that in the 70s or early 60s?
The early 70s, yeah.
So was there plenty of work in England?
Oh, sure, it was booming in those days.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Building trade was booming. Roads, all that kind of thing.
So you worked on both or just anything goes?
No, just mainly the buildings I worked on now. It was easy to get started in the buildings.
And did you spend years there?
I only went over about 3 times just and stayed 6 months each time. And
coming and going.
Coming and going. And then I got started in the Rosapenna.
Again?
Oh, that was after that.
Oh, after that?
Yeah, yeah.
So you spent years there?
Spent around 14 years.
Till you retired?
Till I retired, yes.
So when did you buy this land and this house here, James? Or did you have it built yourself? Or?
No, I bought the site here 10 years ago. Yeah, 10 years ago.
Before the boom started on building?
I bought this site for 4,000.
For four?
Yeah.
Be a lot more now.
Oh my God, sure. Them sites over there, there's 3 of them. Made 120,000 for the 3.
So you just hit it in time, James?
Oh, just in time. Even when I bought the site had been cleared and all and planning permission got. I bought it of a fella, he was going to build a house in it. And he had the site cleared. He decided then not to build a house. He sold it to me. With full planning permission got and the site cleared. I would say it nearly cost as much to clear the site, for it was nearly all stone and rock, as I gave for it.
It's a lovely site though.
It's a good site, it's a good dry site.
Yeah. James, you were talking yesterday as well, we'll go back to the farming a wee while, the older ways, you were talking about cures like.
Yes, yes. The old cures, yeah.
Do you know some of them?
I do. You see, in those days,
you didn't go to a doctor.
You wouldn't want it. And the next door neighbour to know the doctor was with you. That was the old style. Not at all. Oh, they wouldn't go near a doctor. And if they did, they would deny it. They used the old cures. Like, I don't know how real these cures are, but there's a lake now that's supplying, it's the water supply we have now. It was Cort Loch na Creta. Do you know what that means?
I do.
Yeah.
I do, yeah. Well, Cairta and the
Harp. Cairta and Creta, it's TB, isn't it?
Sí, aye.
Well, I reckon if they thought any of your family had TB, they would take them to this lake, it was way out in the hills, and make them drink the water, and that was the cure.
And did it cure anyone?
I don't know, to be quite honest with you, yeah. Now. I wouldn't be sure. But that's how the lake got its name. And for the mumps, and mumps can be a danger enough. The cure for that was get a donkey's headgear, the halter of a donkey, and put it round the wain's head and lead them to the well. And that was the cure for the mumps. So, there was another old cure women had, I don't know what to call it, there was some Irish name on Cletchawahunin or something.
Cletchawahun.
Sure. Did you hear about that?
I did.
An old woman, she would put a lighted candle on your breast.
Yeah.
And she would put
a glass
over it.
Yeah.
And she would pull it, and this was supposed to lift the.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you heard about that?
Oh, I've heard that name. Yeah. Cletchawahun, yeah.
Cletchawahun.
You remember them doing it?
Though? I do, surely. I do know a fellow that had it done, and the doctors gave him up. He was dying. But I don't know what was wrong with him, if you know what I mean. But they sent for this old lady and she did the cure to him. And he lived for 30 years after that. Turned out a fine, he was only a wee lad now, and he turned out a fine man. Whether that was a cure, what cured him or not, I don't know.
Well, there it may have been.
It could be. Could be. And then, of course, the vet. You always had your local vet.
Was it cure animals?
Cure animals. They could cure red water, that's the merle. I don't know what way they did something they'd done, but there was another thing that this local vet would tell you your cow was shot. That meant he was shot by the fairies.
Yeah.
And he got a coal, and you stood on one side of the cow and he stood on the other, and you passed the coal under the cow three times. With the tongs, you know. Aye. And then you got a bit of the cow's hair and you burned it on the coal onto the cow's nose. And that was the cure for the fairies shooting the cow.
But they did believe in the fairies.
Oh, they did, of course.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, they did. Maybe they were fairies, I don't know.
Aye.
It's locally recognised that it was the stations and the houses. You know, you hear tell of the stations.
Oh, yeah.
And the mass being read in the houses that kind of conquered the fairies. That's what the old people would tell you anywhere, would believe. And you had the spraying for have you had a sprained foot or a sprained ankle? This local doctor, quack doctor, he made a band out of, you know, the yarn you would spin on the old spinning wheel.
Yeah.
He made a kind of a band out of that and he tied it round your ankle, and that was the cure for the sprained ankle.
So he believed that he could cure that, yeah.
Aye, he believed he could cure.
He was the local doctor.
He was the doctor. And sure, my God, sure. You would be born a week before the midwife would get near you. They had to walk 10 miles to the nearest owl handy woman. She wouldn't be an owl kind of a handy woman in us, they called her, the midwife. We were 10 miles away from that woman. And my father had no bicycle, no car, no nothing. You were nearly walking before she arrived.
Sure.
But they lived anyway in a kind of a way. But there were people died that shouldn't have died, if you know what I mean, had received the proper medical attention.
I know. But then, having said that, like, Maybe they were healthier people, James.
Oh, they were healthier. There's no doubt. Well, of course, they were dying younger now. The average age of the human being is rising every year. There were youngsters died too. That probably shouldn't have died had they got the proper medical attention. But the healthy ones really was healthy.
Oh yeah.
Oh, they were. See, the only food they ate nearly was farm produced.
Yeah, fresh stuff all the time.
Fresh food.
Never refrigerated or...
Oh, not at all.
No. Didn't have a fridge in the houses then.
Oatmeal, oaten porridge and potatoes. They had their own chickens and their own... A lot of them had their own butter and milk. So that was their food. Bake their own bread, of course.
Oh, of course, yeah.
You would only see a loaf at Christmas.
You wouldn't get many presents at Christmas either, James.
Oh.
Unheard of.
Oh, unheard of. You might get a bar of chocolate or something in your stocking.
A wee thing would please you, though.
You were very happy, any little thing at all. No, there were no quads or any of them motorbikes or any of them things.
Oh, jeez, no.
See wee fellas now, I see a young lad up the road there, he's about 6, and he has a motorised quad. I pass him every day, I go up there, I still keep a few sheep up there.
Well, it keeps you going.
The nephew looks after them for me.
Yeah,
you know.
Still you have an interest in
it. I have an interest in it. It's an outing for me nearly every day.
It is your routine.
I meet this little fellow on his quad, and he's about 6 or 7 years of age, and this is a motorised quad now.
People are ruined, aren't
they? Oh, what? My God. And the amount of speed aces, you know, these young lads at night out with these...
Yeah. By racers.
By racers, yes. Oh, it's terrible around here.
Oh, it's terrible everywhere.
Well, it's terrible around here altogether, and there are more cars burned. If they puncture them, they just burn them.
They burn them out, yes.
Just burn
They're
them.
Only old bangers anyway, sure.
Jeez, there was some reasonable enough old cars. I wish I had them in my young days.
James, you may tell me just about that stone in your area that's called...
That would be the old people that...
Okay, no, it's only fairy tale, but tell me about it, like...
Well, it's sitting up on the top of a ridge, a drum, we would call it. That's why it was called Drum Finn. And the old people maintained Finn McCool. Well, Finn McCool is buried everywhere in every townland. Yeah. But there is something about this stone because it's about the length of a coffin or maybe a little longer, and it's kind of shaped like a coffin. And there wouldn't be a stone within 20 mile of it, of the same calibre, because there wouldn't be a quarry where you could quarry the stone within 30, 40 mile of it. The nearest quarry that you could get a stone of that calibre would be Milford. That's 10 mile away. It had to be brought there, however they brought it there.
Genie, Mike, there would be some weight in that thing.
Aye, but sure, how did they bring the stones to the desert?
Well, that's true. Yeah.
When they were building the pyramids. I wish you'd seen this stone. Sometimes you might get round and have a pair of Wellingtons on you. I'll show you the stone.
I'd love to.
And you can look around to see where you could find a stone like that.
But you feel it was moved, James, you said.
Oh, aye, it was moved. There were an old saying, there were a pot of gold had under it. And they were making an old road into the bog, you know, the county council or land commission or whoever was doing it. And at dinner time, the workmen hooked and hooked looking for this, and it was let kind of drop sideways into a hole. But someday, if I live long enough, I'll get a digger to lift it back out and replace it the way it was.
Yeah, to its former state.
Yeah. And on the land registry, it's registered on the land registry in Dublin as the giant's grave. That's if you look for the ordnance survey map. It's ticked
there,
Giant's grave. But I suppose that's only a landmark.
Yeah, but would it not sound a wee bit like a dolmen, James? You know,
I could show you a great dolmen. You would a wee bit to walk to this one now.
Where's that?
It'll be at a place called Meenbug.
Was it many miles from?
This is a genuine burying ground.
Right, oh, definitely.
A genuine burying ground, but it had been tampered with too.
Was it?
But it, oh, yeah. Indeed it had. The standing up stones with lintels across them.
Yeah. That's a dolmen.
There was one fella now, I showed it to him, and he dug a bit of it. And he came back to me and he says that he found two pieces of flint. And he sent them to the Belfast University. And they sent him back word that this flint was not found in Ireland. That it was only found in somewhere in Wales, this particular flint. It was buried with a burial, if you know what I mean. So... it's a genuine burial ground, I mean, it is genuine.
And do lots of people go visiting there, James?
They don't know it's there at all.
Oh, it's hard to get there.
It's hard to get there. Mm-hmm. It's way out in the hills. Not at all, they don't know it's there at all.
So was it in the same area as your...
Well, near enough. It wouldn't be far from where I was reared.
Yeah.
But oh, it's a genuine burial ground. There's no doubt about that. I could bring you to it. I could bring you most of the road and then show you how to get to it, if you know what I mean.
Need to walk just a few.
You'd have a bit to walk. You need just a pair of Wellingtons. You could motor mostly to the place, and then you might have to walk about a quarter of a mile across a bit of a hill. But very easy, you would follow a headline, and you would come to an iron gate, and you would turn on the iron gate, and it was there in front of you just.
And whose land is that on? Is that on yours?
No, it would be on a crowd they call the Buchanans. They have a stud farm there.
That's interesting.
No, this is a good. I showed it to a fella from Belfast. He was an engineer out in Saudi Arabia or Baghdad or something. And oh, he was more than interested. He said it was the best he ever saw. He said it was a genuine burial ground.
Would there be lots of standing stones?
There would be maybe 15 or 16 of them all in a row.
Mm-hmm. And a wee lintel on the top. Well.
A lintel on the top.
Yeah.
But some of them had been tumbled.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a good few of them with the lintels still standing there. Well, there is, surely. Aye.
Someday, hopefully, we'll get to that, James.
I'll bring you to it. You wouldn't have too far to walk now.
No, I wouldn't mind walking.
No, I mean, I would take you as far as I could on the motor car. And I would direct you how to get to it. You would just follow a ditch. You know, a headline ditch. Mm-hmm. And when you would come to an old iron gate, just turn on the iron gate and it's there in front of you. And it's away at the back of beyond. You know, why they buried them up there? You know, it's amazing.
For another day.
I know, well, you'll be interested in this now.
I'd love to see
that. You'll be interested in this. There's no doubt about it. And I'll show you the other one. You would only have about from here to the shade to walk to the other one, the long stone.
Oh, yeah. It's where Finn's buried.
Aye, where Finn McCool's buried.
That itself will be quite
well,
a good.
Well, you have a look at it and then look around the area and say to yourself, where the nonder God did they get this stone? Because it's not, it wasn't in that area, or within 10 miles of it. And in those days, that would be there for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Of course.
How did they get it there? The only other answer, and why did it just land in that one spot, and with maybe after the ice age or the flood, that's the only other reason that it could have got there. But where did it come from? Even if the flood did carry it, there is no stone around there the same caliber. No. So, I would love you would see these now, and if you ever, you know, want to have a look on a middling good day.
Yeah, I want to.
I would love you would see it.
Yeah, how many miles would it be from here now?
Oh God, it's only up the road about 3 miles.
3 miles. Right, until then. We will meet again, James.
Yeah, thank you. We'll definitely. And I still would love you to see these sites.
I will do.
Yeah.
Okay, James, thanks for the offer.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm sorry there's nobody in to make you a drop of tea.
No, I'm fine. Good morning, James. agus be le looking.
And I hope I was a wee bit of help to you.
You were fine. Good meal.
Even though I didn't talk much, I have Irish, and good enough Irish, but I kind of converse well with it, if you know what I mean.
Halt and clear to just.
That's it.
Sinead. Right, James, my father.